Today on Straight Talk Africa, the legacy of a great son of Africa, the late Ugandan political icon Muzee Boniface Byanyima. To many Ugandans, he symbolized freedom, independence, and resilience. Above all, he was viewed as an advocate of social and economic justice for the ordinary guy. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Ayan Bior, your social media reporter.
Today, it's a conversation on the legacy of a great son of Africa, the late Ugandan political icon Muzee Boniface Byanyima.
And coming up later, you, our audience, have weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook, and Twitter comments, and we'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
We would like to express our appreciation to our Ugandan colleagues, NBS television station, for carrying this show live, and also for producing and sharing a report about Muzee Boniface Byanyima. NBC reporter Zahra Namli has the details.
The pillar and symbol of the Democratic Party, Boniface Byanyima, passes on at 97 years. Even as the candle of the country's statesman burns out, Byanyima's legacy lives on both on the global scene and national politics. A former head teacher of Mbara High School, Muzee Byanyima has been described by many as a rigidly principled man. Born in 1920 in Imbarara, Byanyima studied to become a school teacher with his highest professional career as the headmaster of Imbarara High School. He met his wife Gertrude Kabwasingo, now deceased, in the early 1950s before they got married in 1955, and together they have six children, including Winnie Byanyima, the executive director of Oxfam International. Byanyima, who at some point was a guardian and teacher to young Yoweri Museveni, has been an instrumental citizen in Uganda. He is also one of the phasing out generation of Democratic Party stalwarts that made the party a key player in the politics of Uganda.
He lived to see the end of the regime at that time. He stayed in the country, courageous, as a DP, although the party was banned throughout the Idi Amin years, and lived long enough to see the revival of the Democratic Party in 1980. He has never wavered, and he's left a legacy of forthright leadership, moral also, principles.
Until 2005, he was the national chairman of Democratic Party, and until his death remained a strong pillar of the party.
The fact is that in 2017, there are many more excluded people than in the 50s and the 60s. Therefore, DP is still indispensable in the politics of Uganda. Let us reclaim DP's unique space as the party that struggles for the inclusion of the excluded.
He is the father-in-law of President Museveni's bitterest rival, opposition Forum for Democratic Change leader, Dr. Kizza Besigye.
President Museveni, na NRM, don't be tempted to use your numbers to change this constitution and deny us the opportunity of a smooth, orderly, and peaceful transfer of power.
God be with you till we meet again.
Thank you, NBC Television and Zahara Namli, for this report. Mzee Boniface Byanyima influenced Ugandan democracy throughout his career. My colleague Paul Sisco has more on that.
One of Africa's most prominent post-independence political icons, Mzee Boniface Byanyima, was born in southwestern Uganda. When the Democratic Party was formed in 1954, he joined the party's youth wing. He became a highly respected teacher and then member of parliament from October 1962 until Idi Amin became president and suspended the Ugandan parliament in 1971. Byanyima was one of just a few MPs who stuck to the opposition side while others joined the Uganda People's Congress during President Milton Obote's reign. In 1980, he was elected national chairman of the Democratic Party, a party still in opposition. He held the position, becoming the longest-serving DP chairperson until his 2005 retirement. He taught and helped raise a much younger Yoweri Museveni in his home and in high school.
As a youth, he was a loner. He was Tuhavurwa. He's still a loner and Tuhavurwa. When you hear him talk, he's a leader of government now. When he's talking about what the government has done, he doesn't say, "We have done that." He says, "I have done that."
The late statesman is survived by his children, a son Anthony, his daughter Edith and Winnie, and his son-in-law, Kizza Besigye, who, like the statesman, has been a long-standing, severe critic of the president. Besigye has frequently been arrested and beaten by police while challenging Museveni for president in the last several elections. President Museveni was unable to attend formal ceremonies for his early mentor and for many later years outspoken political nemesis.
I came here to pay tribute to the contribution of Mzee Byanyima. I came to know him as a teacher in Mbarara High School in 1959, the second area in which he pioneered, together with some a few others, was modern farming. You can call it a revolution.
The teacher and politician helped introduce modern farming methods in Uganda. President Museveni praised the former teacher, political leader, as a strict and principled person.
What we all shall die, what lives is your contribution.
I think the best thing for him, if he loves his country and if he loves his family, he should resign.
Mzee Boniface Byanyima died of complications from a stroke. He was 97 years old. Paul Sisco, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Zahara Namli and Paul Sisco, for the reports. For more on the life of Mzee Byanyima, we are joined via Skype from NBS studios in the Ugandan capital, Kampala, by his eldest daughter, Edith Byanyima, a lawyer and businesswoman. Good evening, Ms. Byanyima. Good evening, Ms. Byanyima.
Good evening, Shaka.
How are you?
Fine, thank you, Shaka. How are you?
I am terrific, except, of course, that to be very honest with you, please accept my heartfelt condolences on the passing away of Mzee Byanyima.
Thank you.
Talk to me, what kind of person was he as a father? We don't hear anything. I see. Well, we seem to be experiencing some technical difficulties via Skype. And we now move on to learn more about the political career of Mzee Byanyima. And for that, we are joined by one of his former colleagues, Paul Semwogerere, former president of the Democratic Party for 25 years. Well?
Do you hear me well?
How are you, sir?
I'm well.
Now, talk to me about your relationship with Mzee Byanyima, very briefly.
Well, briefly, I knew Byanyima when he enrolled as a member of the Democratic Party in 1960. That was the year when I also resigned my job as a teacher at St. Leo's College, Fort Portal, at the invitation of the president of the Democratic Party, Benedicto Chiwanuka, to become full-time publicity secretary of the party. And thereafter, I was closely in touch with Mr. Byanyima, who soon became the choice by consensus of many people in this area in Akole to contest for parliament of the Legislative Council of the following year, 1961. And we've been in touch closely ever since until his death recently.
Talk to us, if you could put your fingers on it, what, in your view, do you think that Mzee Byanyima will be best remembered for? And I'm talking about his lasting legacy.
Yeah, I think his lasting legacy as a family member, as the head of the family, was exemplary. It is difficult to run a family, to head a family of children, without any failure to guide the children to be at close quarters with the mother and so on, and extended family also, you know, the members of the extended family to be close to you at a time when there are so many distractions. But he managed. But more importantly, as a political leader, his legacy is that he was a man of principle, that he would never fear to stand for multi-party democracy in Uganda and generally in Africa, even when many of his colleagues abandoned the party because of pressure from the government at that time. He maintained his loyalty, the Democratic Party, until he left Parliament in 1971. What is his principled stand? His clean political behavior, his sincerity, his perseverance.
Very interesting.
I think it's a standout as a legacy of the late Byanyima.
What about what you would say was perhaps his single most contribution to the Democratic Party and indeed the Republic of Uganda?
Yes. Well, Mr. Byanyima was a well-educated Anglican with a secure job, and yet he chose to join the Democratic Party at a time when it was falsely construed as a party catering for Catholics, a party catering for the in Angola particularly, for one ethnic group, the Bairu, and Byanyima being a member of the royal family from Buhenshu, during that kind of party, shows his remarkable contribution the broadening of the religious and ethnic base of the Democratic Party and of political parties in Uganda in general.
You know, I have read a lot about the late Muzee Byanyima. Everybody, frankly, seems to praise him. But isn't there any particular area in which you think, in fact, he may have fell short?
He may have done what?
He may have fell short. In other words, there is, obviously, he had a great promise, but he, in the end, perhaps did not deliver exactly what he wanted to see being done on his watch. In other words, any particular regrets, any remorse?
I have no personal regrets, and the party has no regrets, and the country has no regrets. And the fact that 1980, when we revived the Democratic Party, he was a choice to be the national chair of the party is indicative of the appreciation of his contribution up to date.
Thank you very, very much, Mr. Paul Ssemwogerere. I gather that now I can go back to Ms. Byanyima herself in the NBS studios in Kampala.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Good evening
Thank
again.
Thank you and bye-bye.
You're most welcome, sir. Good evening again, Ms. Byanyima. Can you hear me?
Yes, Shaka. Now, yes, I can hear you.
Yes, talk to me. The first question, of course, I gave you was to talk to me about your dad. What kind of person was Mr. Byanyima to you as a daughter and a child?
He was a loving father. He was kind. He was generous and very sociable, very respectful to everyone. It starts off with being a nice man, a good man. My father was a good man, and that is where it starts from.
How close was he to the family?
He was a family man. My father, our father, or Tata, as we call him, was a family man, and he very close to his wife and his children.
What about the sense of humor, because I have read variously that he did have an excellent sense of humor. Was that true?
He had a fantastic sense of humor. Every day was full of laughter. Everywhere he was with us, we were always laughing, always joking about something.
Was there anything in particular that indicated that you may, in fact, have been interacting with your father, but here was a man, perhaps, who really was very extraordinary, was not a particularly ordinary individual?
There was nothing that showed that. In fact, I think he would be very surprised if we thought of he or if he learnt that people thought he was extraordinary. He was very ordinary in every way.
What were his last words to you? Because I gather that you used to be very close with him, almost to the end.
Well, I was very fortunate to have spent the whole day with him before he left. And most of that day was full of laughter. He would laugh about himself, waking up too early for breakfast. He laughed about himself, asking for breakfast a second time. He laughed in the evening when I couldn't get up from my chair and I said I was too old. He was full of laughter, full of fun. And that's the best that I can remember of him on that day.
Did he have any particular regrets, any particular remorse?
That I didn't spend enough time with him.
That you did not spend enough time with him?
Yeah, you couldn't have enough time with Dad.
Now, Edith,
I have read again copiously that here was a man really close to a man of the people, a man who believed, for example, in the rule of law. And I know, of course, that you are a trained lawyer, but that, like in the words of the late Martin Luther King Jr., the Reverend himself from the Deep South, he pretty much believed in the concept of what Martin Luther said, injustice anywhere is injustice everywhere.
I think he would agree with that. He never told me that, but his actions probably can tell that. He believed in truth and justice, and he always said that that was his faith. Whether you were Anglican or Catholic or Muslim or Hindu, there was one faith that you shared with him, and that was truth and justice.
Where did he get this rare quality of humility? Here is a man who comes from the royal family, from my research, and he marries a wife who happens to belong to the Catholic religion. He is a Protestant, and he actually pretty much lives, frankly, as a Catholic, especially because, let's face it, all the children of Mr. Byanyima, the last time I checked, are Catholics.
As I said, he always said truth was his faith, whether you were Catholic, Anglican, Indian, Chinese, you had one faith, which was truth. If you had faith, it had to be truth. If you didn't have truth, then you didn't have faith. So it didn't matter that we were Catholic and he was Anglican.
Talk to us about some of the things that he did in order to reach out to some people in your neighborhood and beyond who were not very lucky as he was, because I actually heard that this he was not only a man who was an advocate of social economic justice for all of us, but that in fact he did walk the talk by providing some services to some specific individuals. Do you have any specific examples of that?
Well, what I can say is that his house was always full of guests from all walks of life. Women came to see him when their husbands battered them so that he could assist them and take them to hospital. Others came to ask for assistance, to get lawyers, to take cases to court. Others came to find medication or food. There's always someone he was helping. Dad helped, or Tata, as we called him, helped everyone that came to him and encouraged all of us to do good acts of the same kind. I remember on the village once when we all got up with our mother to build a mud and water house for a blind man whose wife had given birth. And that was my father and my mother. Both of them believed in making the environment better than when what they found.
I have news for you, Edith, that when I was a little kid in Kabale, in Kigezi High School Primary, I used to read copies of the daily English newspaper, the Uganda Argus, and I used to read names like Boniface Byanyima and a man called Gaspare Oda. I believe he was from West Nile. These were the only two individuals, frankly, who seemed to be on the opposition. What made him really tick?
There were others. There were Alex Latim, mm-hmm. There was Mr. Obonyo, and all were his friends. We visited their homes. They visited our homes. They were his friends.
What made him become a nationalist, not only in theory, but in practice?
I'm not sure what made him that way, but that's what he was. He just loved and respected everyone.
Did he have any specific message? Go ahead, please.
Sorry? I didn't hear that, Shaka.
I was trying to say, did he have any specific message for the country beyond his family?
I would not want to ask for anything but to say thank you. Thank you very much for the tribute that came to him or to us about him from all over the world. We're eternally grateful and very humbled.
Any specific lessons that you have learned out of being his daughter and obviously out of living, part of his experience to the end? Any particular lessons that you would like to share, not only with Ugandans, perhaps with the entire continent, really, because they're watching you live, not only on the continent, but globally?
Well, when I was 12, he gave me a Bible. And in the Bible, he quoted a verse, "Truth shall make you whole." I would like to live by that. He sets the standard very high, but we try. And that is what I would like to share with everybody else. The standard was high, but we will try.
You will try. Final question, Edith. I have heard along the grapevine that the old man advised his children to stay out of politics. Is that true? And if true, why?
He did not believe that politics in Africa was a fair game. He was an advocate for accountability and good governance throughout his life. And he didn't see this happening and therefore did not think it was a field in which we could find success.
Well, on that note, I guess, frankly, I have to say that thank you so, so much for coming to NBS Studios to talk to us. And I say this, Edith, from the deepest, better part of the bottom of my Kabari heart and soul.
Thank you, Shaka.
You're most welcome. Joining us here in our VOA studio is Remigius Chintu, the chairman of the Uganda National Front. Well, Mr. Chintu, I have to say frankly that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa for the first time.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're most welcome. And joining us from VOA Bureau in New York City is Milton Alimadi, editor and publisher, Black Star News. Well, Mr. Alimadi, you're most welcome again to Straight Talk Africa.
As always, my pleasure. I appreciate hosting me today.
You're most welcome. Do you have any immediate reaction to what you just heard from Edith Byanyima and indeed a little bit earlier from Mr. Paul Kawanga Semogerere?
Yes, of course. First of all, I would like to extend my sincere sympathies and condolences to the immediate family and to the extended family. Edith, whom I know, I've met Olive and Winnie, and to the others whom I have not yet met. And to Dr. Besigye, the son-in-law, whom, of course, many, including myself, believe is the legitimately elected president of Uganda. Mzee Byanyima lived a long and good life. And Chaka, normally, when people pass away, their friends and relatives come forward, people that knew him or her, to say this was a good person. But in this case, there is evidence, clear evidence, that this was a good man. If you look back to his speeches in the Parliament of Uganda, and I have to thank the Daily Monitor for publishing excerpts from those speeches on May 22nd. Those were profound speeches. You could see that this is a man who believed in institutions and not individuals. He believed that the Parliament of Uganda had a role to play in national development. He believed in the role of opposition, and that's why he did not accept the inducements that he said were offered for him to abandon the role of the opposition as a member of the Democratic Party. Very briefly, from some of those speeches, in one speech, he's talking about equality. He says Uganda believes in the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights and Equality. But do we really practice it in Uganda? Do we really see all Ugandans as equal, regardless of what part of the country they come from, regardless of what religion they belong to, regardless of what political party that they belong to? I invite people to go back and read the speech. In another speech, he's talking about equality of opportunity in employment. He says he encountered in his district a job site where they were recruiting people to build a road. And he found out that they were only recruiting people who were members of UPC. And he asked the manager, he said, "Why are you only hiring members of the UPC?" And the manager told him that he had instructions to hire people who belong to the UPC because, allegedly, people who belong to the DP and other parties were lazy. And he said, "How could you know this? Why don't you hire people who belong to the DP, the UPC, and any other party? And then when you see that they're not performing and lazy, then you dismiss them. But how can you know in advance that they're lazy?" And then, so these are the kind of speeches that he was giving in Parliament. And then one other example. He said he noticed that whenever there's an election in a particular district, the Prime Minister at that time, it was obviously Prime Minister Obote, would be visiting those regions. And he says, "Is that the proper way of using state resources? Can you really tell me that it's a coincidence that there's an election going on and the Prime Minister is visiting at the same time?" Well, so he was concerned how we were using national resources then.
I'm afraid.
Just one other point. Today, Shaka, when the president has 150 presidential advisors, I imagine how it must have been very painful for Mzee Byanyima. Thank you, Shaka.
It must be very interesting, especially given that Milton Alimadi also happens to be a son of a former Ugandan prime minister representing the UPC party. Well,
absolutely.
You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, including our social media segment. So don't go away, and don't forget, we are streaming live on Facebook. Just go to Facebook and type Straight Talk Africa.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at www.voanews.com/African Beat.
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. It's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Ayen Bior. Take it away, Ayen.
Thanks, Shaka. Boniface Mzee Byanyima served Uganda as a teacher at Mbara High School, a member of parliament for the Democratic Party, and as the longest-serving DP national chairperson. He is considered by many an icon who constantly nurtured young politicians across party lines and who also pushed for Uganda to adopt multi-party representation. Byanyima died on May 16th at age 97. This leads us to our question of the week, which asks, what is the legacy of Mzee Byanyima? Before we begin, I'd like to thank all of you for using our social media platforms to communicate with us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Use the hashtag Byanyima. And if you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. And speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Ariante Gerald, who writes, the legacy of Mzee Byanyima is straight out criticism of dictator Museveni. Now to a comment of the week from Facebook fan Greens Kansime from Uganda, who writes, Mzee Boniface Byanyima was a true Democrat who resisted the dictatorship presidency of Amin and Obote. He exposed brutality and the barbaric killing of innocent people. He was an incorruptible politician, and he stood by his words without being moved by numbers. His legacy will be remembered by those who believe in democracy. Very interesting. Well, let's go to another comment from Facebook fan Benedicto Orishaba, who writes, it's hard to find a similar legacy. The current generation and coming generation are all bent on quick fixes and personal benefits. And our last Facebook comment comes from Herbert Warigara Jr., who writes, Mzee Byanyima's legacy to me was him sticking to the Democratic Party belief and not minding about changing to another party in the name of making money. Now, a reminder that we appreciate all of the audience feedback, so please keep them coming. And if you're a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com, or post your comment on our Facebook page. Enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Interact with our show as it's streaming live. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV 2 Africa and follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website, or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. Next week on Straight Talk Africa, we look at reflections of what most voices on the continent say is the Africa that we need, meaning good governance, rule of law, and social and economic justice for all. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa. Well, that's all for today's social media segment. Shaka, you and the guest have a lot of social media comments to discuss. Back to you.
Thanks again, of course, for sharing some social media reactions with us. And welcome back. Today, it's a conversation on the legacy of a great son of Africa, the late Ugandan political icon, Mzee Boniface Byanyima. Our distinguished guests are Remigius Chintu and Milton Alimadi, who joins us from VOA Bureau in New York City. Gentlemen, I have to say that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much.
No, you're most welcome.
Thank you, Shaka.
You're most welcome, Ndugu. Now, talk to me, Remigius, your reaction to what you have heard from social media and everything you've heard so far.
I was very shocked when I heard the news that Mzee Byanyima has passed on. And I want to use this opportunity to convey my deepest condolence to the family, and especially to Winnie, whom I know very well. Whenever we meet, I call her my sister.
Really?
Yeah, we hug and say, hello, sister. And I had the opportunity to speak to Mr. Byanyima several times on the telephone, especially during the time when I was publishing the UDC newsletter, which made a lot of waves
I remember that when I just came to the States in the 70s, yeah.
And Muzeyi Byanyima, as you may have known, he was very selective in, when things started getting very hot, he was very selective with regards to people he talks to and deals with. Mm. And in one of my conversations with him, he said, "Son, why don't you come to Mbarara and visit me, because I want to see you and talk to you face to face." I said, "Muzeyi, I cannot make it to Mbarara because that monster we have in Entebbe may not let me ride from Entebbe to Mbarara." And he laughed about it. He said, I understand. And we left it there. But we were in good communication by telephone until later times when his health was very weak. I didn't bother waking him up on the phone. One thing that I want to say about Muzeyi Byanyima is we are looking at a man who grew up during the time of colonialism. And as you remember, during that time, politics was very, very tribal at the beginning.
And sectarian.
And very sectarian. And in Ankole, as you know, you had two groups, the Hima, who were the ruling class, to which this man belongs.
Correct.
Protestants were the favored by the colonialists, to which group this man belonged. When the Democratic Party was started in 1954, it was started as a political party to defend the deprived population. We had very, very severe discrimination against mostly Catholics and Muslims. When the Democratic Party spread from Buganda into other regions, they found that the same situation happened in the north, in the west, and in the east because of the British colonialism. Now, in Ankole, the Bairu were not favored the way the Himas were favored. The Catholics were not favored the way the Protestants were favored. But this man rose beyond that level.
He had no boundaries, no
parochial
borders.
Thinking. And he said, "No, I have to stand by those who are being discriminated. I have to defend those who are being suppressed."
He was inclusive.
Very inclusive. Then he joins the Democratic Party. And you had a very strong men, teachers like him, namely Mr. Basil Bataringaya, who was a Mwiru and a Catholic. And they locked up together and they spread into other areas of Uganda, into Buganda, into the northern region and the western region. And he, Mr. Byanyima, was not seen as a Munyankore from Ankole, but he was seen as a Ugandan.
A nationalist.
A nationalist.
Very
the
unique
concept
at that point
of
in
nationalism
time,
started taking roots with the presence of the two main political parties at that time, the Ugandan National Congress and the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party, for some reason, succeeded faster than the Ugandan National Congress.
Why did it succeed, you think? Is it perhaps because of the fact that the Catholic Church was very well organized, and
both churches were very well organized.
But certainly the Catholic Church, perhaps a little bit more so, because I used to see even their churches themselves. They were,
cheap
buildings of class.
Yeah, that is true. But if you look at the message of the Democratic Party, which is truth and justice, freedom for all, and independence for everyone. And also, you would probably say they were more conservative than the Uganda National Congress. The Uganda National Congress, when you look at the characters in there, Ike Musazi, Jolejo Kiwanuka, Dr. Kununka.
Jolejo, I remember his blue
Mr. Enwu from Lango.
And White Nile.
Yes. These guys were more on a Pan-African ideology.
He had actually, Jolejo had a newspaper called the Buganda Post.
Oh yes.
My father
but
used to be.
But they were more on the, they were more attracted to the socialist ideology. And that scared both churches, the Catholics and the Protestants.
It is interesting to know that among the founders of the Democratic Party, Mr. Sebastian Chibuka published a Luganda paper which was saying, defend your land, your country from the scourge of impending communism,
you know,
which was, you know, trying to scare people away from Uganda National Congress.
You know, Remigius, there is a saying that no society gets a leadership that it desires. Rather, you get a leadership that you deserve.
Precisely.
But talking about Muzeye Byanyima, frankly, he would seem to be a man that is very unique.
He was extremely unique.
And what makes him so?
I think during that time, if you look at his generation, we had very unique men, which we don't have today, unfortunately. I don't know what went wrong. Maybe the water got contaminated.
Interesting.
We are drinking wrong water now.
Is it possible that because they had a formidable adversary in terms of European colonialists?
Yes, but also the formation of our people at that time. Look at the families. All these men came from very good families, and they also brought up good families.
Because, you see,
the daughters have been talking about how wonderful their father was.
Right.
If you, and that can be said about several other people.
And in fact, you can even broaden it to continental Africa.
Precisely.
And look, for example, at the type of leaders who came together in 1963 on May 25th to form the Organization of African Unity. We're talking about a Ghanaian founding president.
Yes.
Dr.
Kwame Nkrumah.
Kwame Nkrumah, the Osagyefo.
Yes.
We're talking about Colonel Gamal Abdel Nasser.
Yes.
Of Egypt. We're talking about Ben Bera.
Yes.
Of Algeria. We're talking about Mwalimu Julius Kambarage Nyerere.
Yes.
Of Tanganyika at that time. We're talking about Kenneth Kaunda.
Yes.
Milton Obote.
Yes.
Sekou Toure.
Yes.
We're talking about those types of people. Where are they now?
That is the tragedy of Africa. When you look at the way they formed the Organization of African Unity, none of them was looking out for what am I going to eat? What am I going to get?
They were not patriotic to their stomachs.
They are not
the
patriotic.
The stomachs of their families and friends.
Those were not
but
the
issue. The country.
The country. And the future.
And the African personality, perhaps.
When Julius Nyerere stood up and said, I will agree to chair the Commission of Liberation, and risked putting all the opposition groups in Tanganyika at the time to fight against colonialism in South and Northern Rhodesia, Nyasaland,
yes.
Basutoland, and South Africa, and Southwest Africa, which is now Namibia. He knew that we are fighting against a formidable enemy, the European colonialism. How many times did they try to blow up Julius Nyerere, and he survived?
And of course, they killed Eduardo Mondlane.
Yes.
The man that would have and been the future president of Mozambique.
Exactly.
In Dar es Salaam,
so,
yeah.
These guys were not looking out for themselves. I have heard from my friends from Tanzania, they said, Nyerere squandered our resources for the liberation of Southern Africa. Yes, you may think it was squandering, but he was investing. If it was not Julius Nyerere,
yes,
none of those South African countries would be free today.
You might also add, by the way, Remigius, that he also had the distinction, or at least the thinking at the time, that the independence of Tanganyika could actually be delayed so that both Uganda and Kenya be free, so that you could form an East African Federation, of which he knew he would not, in fact, be the first president.
He was not interested in becoming first president. He was interested in securing and guaranteeing that if an African country is free, it is actually free from colonialism, and there is no second round of being recolonized. These guys were not looking at themselves, what they are going to get, or looking at their own ethnic group as we see today, or their religious sections or clans. That was not the issue. They were looking at guaranteeing the safety and the prosperity of the continent. I would say this because I was a young man at the time and I was very much interested in reading about politics.
there was a great correlation between our thinking on the continent and the founding fathers of the United States.
Very interesting, but especially because, of course, people like Kwame Nkrumah, mm-hmm. Nnamdi Azikiwe of Nigeria, had gone to school here.
Precisely.
And had been part of the Pan-African movement.
Exactly. When that
And had learned from some great guys like Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois.
Precisely.
And George Padmore.
Yes.
Yeah.
When you remember this guy who said, give me liberty or give me death.
Very interesting. Now,
that was the motto we had in among our leaders in Africa.
Ali Madi, we talk about Mzee Byanyima being a man that is very principled, a man that is very stubbornly independent. But are those the type of qualities, frankly, that a politician needs to succeed? Because if you can't figure out how to be politically flexible, can you somehow bring people together so that at the end of the day, you can, in fact, bring some people say here, bring pork back to your people?
Well,
is that a strength or a weakness, politically?
No, I don't think it's a weakness at all. And I'll give you the perhaps the greatest example from the continent, since you were talking about many Pan-African leaders as well. Nelson Mandela, when he was locked up, nobody had the idea that 27 years later, the prisoner would turn things around and his jailers would end up being the ones who were actually in prison, the apartheid regime. And apartheid came to an end.
Mm-hmm.
So it's true that sometimes it takes time, it takes sacrifice. I think that Mzee Byanyima's life was dedicated to sacrifice. He was trying to show the new generation of Ugandans that sometimes it's not easy and there's no shortcut. By refusing inducements to surrender his principles, he's hoping that others can emulate his example. So, for example, we have members of parliament today. Why cannot they emulate some of his examples? Why can't they say that we are willing to sacrifice in order to build a better Uganda? We will make sure that the constitution is not altered, the age limit is not removed, so that the current ruler can run again. In fact, we will go further. We will reintroduce presidential term limits. We will make sure that as members of parliament, we create a level playing field for Uganda. We make sure that a contestant in the presidential election is not the one who decides to appoint the people who declare the winner of that election. I believe that Mzee Byanyima deserves that legacy. The example he showed, I hope the new generation can emulate that. And it's not surprising that he was a character like that, Shaka, because in fact, you're right. He grew up in the era of Mwalimu Nyerere. He himself, he was a teacher, Uganda's Mwalimu, Kwame Nkrumah. All of those people came up in the 1940s, 1950s, and moved Africa towards independence from colonialism. I think now it's incumbent upon us to dedicate ourselves to remove tyranny in every African country, just as Mzee Byanyima's generation was dedicated to removing colonialism from Africa.
I just discovered, by the way, that Mzee Byanyima was a contemporary of a one-time famous Kenyan Attorney General, Charles Njonjo, Mugani Njonjo of Kabete, at King's College Budo. Now, let me ask you this question, Ali Madi. You know the saying that it is not aptitude, but attitude that gains altitude. You're talking about Mzee Byanyima, who looked at the shortest distance between two points, being a straight line, where other people will tell you it must be a detour in order for them to survive.
Mzee Byanyima was not a person who was lured by the jewels of the world. That was not his number one dedication, of course.
Selfless.
And I think And I think if we take just a little bit of that kind of sacrifice, truly, we can create a better nation. We don't need a nation where 80% of our youth are unemployed. I'm sure that must have caused them deep anguish and deep pain. Let's create a better Uganda as a thank you to his legacy.
Now, Remigius, you know, yes, there are people when Madiba retired.
Yes.
They said, is there really anybody who can fill his shoes? And they are looking at that time, of course, Thabo Mbeki. And yes, he doesn't seem to have filled those shoes. Jacob Zuma does not seem to have filled those shoes. Is there anybody, frankly, if you were to talk to us from the deepest, better part of your calluses of heart and soul, who can step in the shoes of Mzee Byanyima, either in the Democratic Party or the Republic of Uganda, for that matter?
Well, first of all, I look at the principles of the Democratic Party of truth and justice. Many times I've asked myself, even those people today who are purporting to be members of the Democratic Party, are they really abiding by those principles? My answer is probably 90% of them are not.
Mm-hmm.
We have to rediscover that. Now, those principles are not basically and exclusively for only those people who belong to the Democratic Party. Even a UPC man should have truth and justice. Because when it comes to justice, justice transcends your political, social, cultural, religious boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to truth, there is one book I read many years ago. The man said, there is no Catholic mathematics, there is no Protestant mathematics. Whether you are Protestant or Catholic, 2 + 2 = 4. Period.
And when you are a human being, by the way, when you are hungry, it doesn't matter what color you have. It doesn't matter which geography you come from.
Exactly.
You need food.
Exactly.
When you are thirsty, you need water or juice.
Exactly.
And when you need to breathe, guess what? You all need access to oxygen.
Exactly. So what we need to do now, this generation of Ugandans and Africans for that matter, is to understand the nitty-gritty things that propel life. And to know that injustice for one person is an injustice for all of us. So we have to fight this injustice. We have to fight bad government. It breaks my heart when I read reports from Uganda. $620 million have been stolen from the oil fund, and we know who stole it, and we are still praising them as honorable. When someone steals a chicken in the Owino market, we'll stone him to death. Why do we have this kind of injustice, you know, allowed in high places, killing our country? And you look at what is going on, all these fat guys sitting there, stealing money day and night.
Well,
there is not even medicine
time
in the hospitals.
Time happens not to be a best-seller because the supreme law of the land called the Constitution does not work. It has been transformed into a sort of personal manifesto.
Precisely.
Well,
Uganda is ruled by one man according to his whims.
On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Remigius Chintu, Milton Arimadi, who joined us from New York, and Edith Byanyima and Paul Kawanga Semogerere, who joined us earlier from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Batte. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Uganda. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.